For the past year, I have been a fellow with the Solutions Journalism Network. It's a nonprofit organization that works to rebalance the news so what we read, hear, and listen to each day are not only problems, but also solutions. My beat was public safety and criminal justice, and I helped curate hundreds of stories from around the world for the organization's Solutions Story Tracker on these topics. I also created collections of stories, and one of them focused on women and incarceration. While there are many more men behind bars than women, the Sentencing Project found the rate of growth for female imprisonment has been twice as high as that of men since 1980. In New Mexico, the rate of incarceration for women is also rising. Incarcerated women face unique challenges, particularly with regards to trauma. A report by the Vera Institute of Justice found that 86% of women behind bars had experienced sexual violence at some point in their lives. The most successful programs I read about for women returning to the community focused on helping them come to terms with what happened in their pasts. The best solutions were also trauma-informed and provided numerous wraparound services to help women reintegrate into society. Today, we're going to hear about such a program in New Mexico called Crossroads for Women. The nonprofit organization began 22 years ago. It offers housing, counseling, addiction recovery, and employment services. A study by the New Mexico Sentencing Commission looking at arrest rates for clients of Crossroads and Maya's Place, its residential site, prior to them entering the program, compared the rates to 3 years after clients had graduated. The average arrest rate dropped significantly. We'll hear from Corey Lee, she's interim executive director of Crossroads, as well as Ashley Senna, who graduated from Crossroads and is now a case manager, and Marisa Sanchez, who is currently a client. Corey, what are the needs that Crossroads is trying to address?
It was started by a lawyer who was going into the jails here in Albuquerque. And what she found that women were coming through the system and she was seeing them on a regular basis. What she did was she started talking to them and really trying to figure out what was causing them to come back. And the overwhelming answer seemed to be that there were resources that they couldn't access or that weren't available. Things like substance abuse treatment or basic needs, clothing, food, things like that. And so that's how Crossroads came about. And about 3 years into the creation of Crossroads, that's when we received our first HUD contract, because what we realized is that housing was a fundamental need that the women were not able to get for themselves. And so we received the first HUD contract, and that was 25 beds. And currently today we are at around 90 beds.
So if you had a HUD contract, you got, what did that mean for the organization? You could provide housing for women?
Housing.
And that was subsidized by the federal government?
Yes.
Okay. What did that housing look like? Was it in a house altogether? Was it scattered site? Like, here's a voucher, go get an apartment?
The first HUD contract provided 25 scattered sites. So the ladies were in their own apartments all over the city. And they are provided with a case manager at the main building at the Crossroads. They also have family support services, and they have vocational services. And then we have therapeutic groups running all week. So, and that's, we've had that for a number of years. In about 17 years ago, we were asked to take over a program that was funded by the city, and that was Maya's Place. That was our first congregate program.
So people all lived in one place together.
Yes. And so women were coming directly out of incarceration into that program. And then they would transition to the Crossroads into a scatter site. So there was this continuum of care services that really allowed the women to have long-term support.
Why was something like Maya's Place an important addition to the program?
One of the major reasons that Maya's is so important and the Pavilions, because those are our therapeutic communities today, is building community. And recovery and living life on life's terms for women often has to do with the relationships they've built in their world. And that's what we know from working with women, is that they see their world through the relationships that they have. And so building a sober support system is key for success. And so having a congregate community where there's women living together and knowing that there are other people that are going through the same thing that they're going through, they have someone to talk to, they have support services right there, because at our therapeutic communities, case managers, family specialists, VOCs, they are on site with the ladies. So they're living in their home, basically. And so you're able to build a really strong foundation with all those supports being so close, and then just having that community.
And is a VOC, is that a vocational?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry
about
that.
That's what I thought. It's someone who's working on, like, for job training and job. Okay.
Yes.
And when you say therapeutic community, so the women who entered Maya's place and the pavilions, are they, they're also dealing with substance abuse?
Yes. That,
okay.
So all of our ladies in all of our communities have co-occurring disorders. So they have a mental health diagnosis and a substance abuse diagnosis. They have either been homeless or they are precariously housed, meaning if they were going to exit incarceration, if they didn't come to us, they would have exited into homelessness.
How many beds do you have now that you're providing?
We have 50 beds at the Crossroads. That's our scattered site housing. We have 22 beds at our Pavilions program in Las Lunas. And we have 14 beds at our Maya's Place program.
How long are women in the Maya's Place and the Pavilions?
That is a one-year program. And the scattered site housing for the Crossroads is permanent supportive. So you can be in that program as long as you want to participate in services. The average stay is about 2 years. One of the things that we do is we support the women in applying for Section 8 and other housing programs. So usually once someone gets their Section 8, they'll exit out of our program.
How do you gauge the success over the years of the program?
We do look at recidivism. We look at somebody's, what was happening in someone's life the year after they graduated our program or left our program. We do that. Progress and success look different on everyone. So for one woman, success for her may be increasing her reading level. We've had women come in who, for a number of reasons, had to quit school when they were in middle school. And so we supply tutors if they're interested. So that could be one way to gauge success. Other ways is identifying housing. We do our very, very best to make sure that everyone who leaves our program has a safe place to go.
Why do you think that has been effective?
I think it's because of women like Ashley and Marissa. I think that community is important. We talk about relationships, and when you graduate from one of our programs or leave our programs and something happens in your life that is causing stress for you, because you've built those relationships, you know you can come back. Mm-hmm. One of our other programs is our POPS program, which is our peer-on-peer support services. And that allows women who have exited our programs to come back for aftercare services. So they know that if something is not mm-hmm. going right for them, they have some place to turn. And it can be very scary to go out into the world after graduating one of our programs, or even graduating any program, a substance abuse program, to go back and say, you know what, I relapsed, or I'm having trouble because I can't see my kids, or whatever's going on for them. But to have a friendly face is so important, and somebody that will say, yes, come on in.
One of the programs that I volunteered with to help mentor women coming out of incarceration, they warned us when we went in, it's like women are more, or they're more complex, mm-hmm. or their situations are more complicated, often because there's children, mm-hmm. but also trauma. I don't know if people understand that's a component that's just, it's different for women than mm-hmm. men.
Absolutely. We tend to see people at face value, and we don't necessarily remember that everyone is complex, that everyone has experienced some sort of trauma. And trauma can be anything. It can be walking in front of a car and the car honks at you. That's a trauma. But what we know for a lot of the women that we met, we see a deeper trauma than that. And so understanding that, especially when our staff is working with our ladies, it's really understanding that the behaviors that they're seeing aren't necessarily because that person is a problem child. That is not it. I mean, people aren't problem children. People are children who experience trauma, and that trauma impacted how they view their world.
Mm-hmm.
And so understanding why someone reacts to a situation, and then instead of yelling back and saying, hey, knock that off, you say, hey, are you okay? What's going on for you right now? When we say that we're trauma-informed at Crossroads, that's what we mean. We are taking into consideration that everyone has experienced pain in some form in their life, and it's impacted them.
That's the idea of, instead of asking what's wrong with you, what happened to you?
Yes.
Ashley, what did you need when you were coming out of incarceration?
My story was more of a story of homelessness and substance abuse. I had been through several programs trying to correct that behavior of substance abuse, and none of them seemed to quite fit what I needed. So when I found Maya's place, it was the community aspect that Corey was talking about. You know, I had never really lived with other women or other people who were experiencing the same thing that I was in such a casual and relaxed environment. You know, other programs were very, I always describe them as plasticky.
Plasticky.
Rigid. Yes, like, you know, like you walk into a place that's all made out of plastic, right? And it's got like a certain formation of how it's supposed to be. And they have certain expectations of what your success is going to look like and what your, you know, what your experience is supposed to look like. So when I found Maya's place, that was not the case. It was truly individual basis, you know, and I needed that kind of support. I needed, I had no foundation for housing. I had burned bridges with my family and, you know, any opportunity for success that I may have had as in regards to connections with other people. So the community aspect of Maya's place really gave me what I needed, and special attention to my personal trauma and certain areas in my life that I needed to work on, you know, like my vocational training and my mental health, and having all those things being looked at individually was very helpful for me.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm talking about women exiting incarceration with the nonprofit organization Crossroads for Women, which also operates Maya's Place for women with co-occurring mental health and substance abuse disorders. Ashley Senna was a client of Crossroads and is now a case manager. Like the majority of women who are incarcerated, she has a history of sexual abuse or trauma.
I grew up in a household. My mom was, she worked very hard, and sometimes one or two jobs. And sometimes when we're doing that, we're not paying attention to who is around our children. And there was also another experience when I was just a baby of, you know, being kidnapped by my biological father and had some abuse there. Growing up with these traumas, it wasn't something that we talk about, right? We hold it. Well, for me, it wasn't. It was like we hold it in, we shove it down, and we find other ways for us to heal ourselves. And that's kind of where the substance abuse came in for me. It was a self-medication.
What was different when you got to Maya's place in terms of addressing some of those underlying things that had driven you to like substance abuse and other issues?
Well, when I went to Maya's place, one thing that had never happened before for me really was they had asked me, you know, like to go see a psych and a counselor. And I found out that, you know, I do have a mental health diagnosis of bipolar.
Was that scary? Was it helpful?
It was helpful for me in a way, okay, because I was able to get on some mental health medications for me that helped me to get on a level playing ground with everybody else. So then I could start working on my recovery. And then being in that counseling, too, was a place where I could really start talking about the stuff that I wasn't talking about, you know. And that was very helpful because you can only go so long in life by shoving everything down until you implode, you know. So, and being treated like a human being for the first time that I felt, you know, like.
What people, did that look like?
People were seeing my ugly. I call it my ugly, you know, like my truth, you know, my trauma, my scars. And it didn't change the way that they treated me, which was mind blowing for me. And it was like breathing for the first time. And that's the staff. That's the other clients. It was just something I had never experienced in my life.
You hadn't experienced that when you'd gone through like other programs?
No, it was, well, you know, you have your expectations at these other programs. And I also attribute that experience in other programs for me to my readiness to change my life too. So,
Okay. So you have to be in the right place.
I feel like you do, yeah.
Okay. So when did you graduate?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I graduated Maya's place, I think, back in 2012. And then I went straight on to the Crossroads program, and I was there for about a couple of years, I believe. It's been so long. And I graduated from the Crossroads. I have my graduation certificates hanging up on my wall in my office at home right next to my associate's degree, because those are like my headlining accomplishments. But I can't think of the exact date. But and I also, like Corey was describing, I had applied for Section 8. But at that point, when my name came up for Section 8, my life had changed so much that I didn't need to take advantage of that opportunity. I'm now married and going to college for my bachelor's degree in social work, and life just looks so much different than what it did when I walked into Maya's place.
What made you decide to stay and be a case manager?
The interactions that I had with staff when I was going through the program deeply inspired me. I had a case manager when I was at the Crossroads, and she sat me down. We were just talking, having case management, and she like just looked at me with like complete, you know, genuine intentions. It was like, you would be really great at doing this. You would be a great case manager. And so...
what would that feel like when someone said that to you?
I just remember, like, I got kind of emotional in that moment because, you know, I'd never experienced that type of moment. And, you know, as a client or as a human being, when somebody's talking to you, you can tell if they're being genuine or not. And so, and I felt that sincerity in what she said. And that motivated me to start going to school, and that's what I set out to do. I actually started going to CNM and with the intention of just becoming a social worker and becoming a case manager at Crossroads or Maya's Place. And so it's been full circle. I've reached that goal. I graduated from CNM. I'm now attending New Mexico Highlands University here in Albuquerque. I'm almost done with my bachelor's degree and while working with Maya's Place Women.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Marisa, what is it like to have people like Ashley being case managers for folks like you who are in the program?
It was different for me to come out and step into such a supportive environment. It's very inspiring. It makes it a lot easier to interact with them and to be honest with them because they've been there and they understand. And you don't feel like they're being judgmental on any level when you tell them something. So you feel like you can be completely honest about what's going on in your life or what has gone on in your life and not have to worry about repercussions or being judged or feeling like you're not worthy. There's never any sort of judgment when you interact with people like Ashley.
How is that different from other programs you had gone through before?
I've actually never gone to a program before. I did a long stretch incarcerated. Now, I did step into some of the programs that they offered while I was incarcerated, and it was a lot different because the people are so judgmental, and most of them haven't experienced those things in life. They're reading to you from a textbook and what they've learned through school, and it just didn't work for me. I would feel like I was being judged. I would feel like I wasn't good enough. I would feel like they thought they were better than me, and I would step back out of the program.
How long were you incarcerated?
8 years.
Are you comfortable talking a little bit about your journey to incarceration and how you are at this place now?
My journey to incarceration was a long one. I experienced a brutal, brutal sexual trauma when I was young. And after that moment, I became very power hungry. Mm-hmm. I had made up my mind that I would never be in a situation again where I didn't have complete power over the situation because I felt so powerless when that happened to me. So I stepped into the street lifestyle, so to speak, and I stepped into it really hard. Anything and everything that I could do to have power over the next person, I did. You know, when you're in the street life, they want you to put in work, is what they call it. And any sort of work that was offered to me, I did. And I went hard and I made it to the top of that lifestyle quickly, very quickly. But I also, you know, I had a lot of police interaction. The ATF had started watching me. I grew too fast, I suppose, and I fell really hard when they got me. I fell really hard. So I went from the top to rock bottom very quickly.
So you were 8 years incarcerated. When you were coming out, what were you looking for? What did you need?
My main need was to go somewhere where they could address what had taken, because at that point I didn't understand why I was always thinking the way that I did. I didn't understand why I had a criminal mentality and couldn't make my brain think the way that normal people think. Like, every thought that I had was a criminal lifestyle. So I was looking for somewhere that would help me figure that out and change that way of thinking. And Maya's Place has done that.
How long have you been in Maya's Place?
Since May.
Okay.
8 months, almost 8 months.
What have you found there that is you feel is setting you on a different path for the rest of your life?
The main thing is the support. The support of everybody. You can't even describe how awesome the staff is. They're very supportive, but they get in there and they dig and they help you find that trauma that most of us, like Ashley said, we don't talk about it. We bury it and we go forward. They help you dig that out and learn how to process it and understand it.
That's kind of scary, isn't it?
It was at first, but after the feeling that you have after you've addressed that trauma and processed it and let it go is, it's just such a weight lifted. And so the first couple times I addressed some of my traumas, it was a little scary. I was a little bit emotional for the day. But once that feeling passed and I had that weightlessness for that little while, it was unbelievable. And then I just started craving, let's find everything. Let's find everything wrong and get it out.
What's it like living with other women?
I lived with other women for a lot of years. But this environment is much better because of the support system and the community that we have. When you live with other women, when you're incarcerated, there's a lot of cattiness, I guess is the only word for it. There's a lot of talking and gossiping and backstabbing. And so that was an uncomfortable environment. So when I stepped into Maya's Place and I learned that living with other women isn't always like that, like we can be supportive of one another. We can care about one another. We can offer to help one another instead of bring each other down. That was a great, great feeling for me.
So what are your hopes for the future?
My hopes for the future are actually to step into a staff position when I graduate. Like, I've been so inspired to do that. I've seen the way that they help other people, and I want to be able to do that. I crave that. Just, I want to help, you know? I want to help people like me. So my hope is to step into a staff position at Crossroads when I graduate and move forward, get the education that I need to step into a caseworker position or whatever staff position I can get that's going to help somebody else.
Ashley, what's it like working with women like Marissa?
It's incredible. It's what I want to do. It's where my heart is. I want to support other women like me, you know? I want to support and watch that growth and do, you know, if I can just plant the seed in one person or support them on their journey. And I think about the vocabulary that I use because I'm just there, like I said, as a support system and you know, here's some resources. Let me listen to you. Let me support you in what you need. Their success has really nothing to do with, you know, me. I think it's deeply ingrained in all of us to have success. But it's inspiring, and it keeps me clean and sober, too. I think it's important to go back and remember where I came from so that when I do step out of my role as a case manager and I go home and I live the rest of my life, you know, that reality that, you know, who I was and is just right around the corner, you know. And it's beautiful to watch people grow into, you know, their full potential. And then when they leave the program, you hear from them again later on and you see that full potential has expanded into something that they never even imagined.
If you just joined us, I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm speaking with Ashley Senna, Marissa Sanchez, and Corey Lee from Crossroads for Women about how the organization helps women exiting incarceration to return permanently to the community. Corey is the interim executive director. Marissa is a client, and Ashley, who we just heard from, is a former client and now a case manager with Crossroads. What was it like for the folks from, I guess I'll say, your former lives? To see you go through this transformation, or have you had to sort of leave some folks behind?
For me, it's been leaving some folks behind. It's an important thing for my recovery is, you know, people, places, and things, just to let them be where they are. And if they're ready, you know, I'm always here as a support system, but I don't particularly seek out those old environments. I also do volunteer work with outreach, you know, outreach services, so...
Reaching out to people
on
who
the streets,
still, oh, okay.
Who are still using. Mm-hmm. That's another little gig I participate in. It's not necessarily my crowd that I was using with, but you know, it's kind of stepping back into that old world for a minute to help others. Though it's a different approach.
Marissa, you're more new to this.
Yes, Most of the people that I knew, I haven't spoke to in years because mm-hmm. of my incarceration. So it was pretty easy to leave them behind. My family, however, they're very straight. They're very good people. And they're absolutely blown away by the transformation that I've made. I actually got to interact with them just the other day, and they are just astounded that I'm such a completely different person.
I know you said you have about 50 beds, Corey?
Yes. Between our aftercare and our other programs, we served 181 women last year.
So what is the need, and are you able to meet the need?
Unfortunately, we're never able to meet the need. There are women in need of services. As we know, the number of women being incarcerated in the state of New Mexico is going up. And we anticipate that our services are needed now more than ever.
What does your funding come from?
We have funding from different organizations, different state organizations. We have funding from county. We have funding from the city, and we have funding from New Mexico Corrections. And then we have smaller grants from foundations.
Are there people who have looked at your programs and what you guys are doing who see it working and want to take it to their community or to other places?
We've had lots of conversations. We're very open to helping any organization that wants to help anyone. And so we have a lot of people who come to us and say, how do you do what you do? It may sound a little trite, but I think it begins with love, you know? And we have a model. It's very structured. It's, you know, based on Stephanie Covington's work, Lisa Nijewitz, Maslow's hierarchy of need, all these beautiful things, evidence-based. But when it comes down to it, that support that the ladies give one another, that the staff and the relationship the ladies have with staff, and that compassion and empathy has been the key to Crossroads' success.
In terms of like larger structural issues in society, do you all have thoughts about policies that need to change based on what you've experienced at Crossroads?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think just thinking back to at the beginning of this interview, we were talking about the very real, the reality that lots of women experience sexual trauma, you know, and when you guys were talking about that, and I was thinking about when the whole Me Too thing started and everybody was just, you know, everybody around me was just so hyped up with that. And me, that was just reality. It was like, so when I think about policies that need to be changed, you know, identifying these things that are happening to women and the fact that women do experience and walk through life differently than men, and that we do have separate needs when it comes to the experiences that we have throughout our lifetimes. So, I mean, I can't pin down just a specific policy, but I think that opening up, you know, and when it starts in incarceration, you know, having specific programs for women in incarceration, or maybe when we are sending women to prison or into incarceration, considering these things before we just send them straight there.
What about you, Marissa?
I think that there are a lot of things that need to be identified before somebody's sent to incarceration. I think they're very quick to send somebody to prison without trying to send them to someplace to rehabilitate them, trying to identify what's going on and help them, because prison doesn't help. Prison, especially if you have a substance abuse problem, let's be real, prison does not help a substance abuse problem. Prison doesn't help trauma. Matter of fact, prison makes trauma worse. So I think that we need to work harder, especially like domestic violence issues. I know I was in a very, very abusive relationship for a long time, and there was no help for that. The law does not help that. You know, they don't. I mean, they'll offer you a restraining order or something small like that, but there's no help to get away from that person. There's not really. When you catch a case, they don't try to help you. They don't identify what's going on with you. They don't step in.
When you're arrested and you're
in
court.
Yes, they don't offer any kind of, well, let's send you to some place to rehabilitate you. Let's find out what's going on with you and use that, consider that in your court case. There's none of that. And I feel like that's something that's crucially important, especially to women that are being incarcerated. I feel like that's something that should be considered in a court case.
Corey, do you have anything to add?
Well, what we know is there are a large number of women being incarcerated in New Mexico that are being incarcerated because of drug crimes or property crimes. And then there are some women who are being incarcerated for violent crimes. But the largest number of women, the largest percentage, they are drug crimes.
They're nonviolent.
They're nonviolent. And there can be alternatives to incarceration. There can be treatment. There can be support. And, you know, let's look at that before we look at incarcerating someone and taxing the system, but also re-traumatizing a woman, because incarceration itself is a brand new trauma. And so how do we move away from being punitive and instead being supportive?
I agree with Corey on that. I just, especially the drug crimes, there are a lot of things that could be done besides sending them to prison. There's many, many things. We should, that money that you're paying to send them to prison could be invested in more rehabilitation centers, more therapeutic communities, more supportive things instead of just sending them up right away.
I also think that mental health needs to have a bigger scope on that, too, because I believe that when a person commits a crime or catches a case, as Marissa would say, you know, whether it be a drug-related crime, property damage, or even a violent crime, I think that if we paid closer attention to people's mental health, maybe the violent crimes wouldn't be happening. You know, I just feel like, you know, people, human beings, we can only handle so much. Sometimes when we hit that point of a violent crime, it's that moment that I described earlier of that implosion that happens. So,
Well, I want to thank you all for coming.
Thank you for having us.
That was Corey Lee, interim executive director of Crossroads for Women, as well as Ashley Senna, a former client who is now a case manager at Crossroads, and Marisa Sanchez, who is currently a client. I also visited Maya's place to talk to Kelly Allen, a former client who is now a case manager. After years in and out of incarceration, Allen joined the program in 2013.
I just needed something that would help me. And Maya's place, the hubbub in jail, was this is really a place that could help you. Not only would it help you with, you know, your situation with homelessness, but it helped you with mental health as well. All of these things were something that was attractive because they were doing these services that were going to address all of these issues that I had been screaming, hey, somebody help me with all my life.
Can you tell me a little bit about your journey?
My journey started when I was probably 15 years old. I started smoking pot and drinking, and my parents drank. And so I come from a little small town in southeastern New Mexico called Hobbs, America. And so my parents drank. And so I thought it was, you know, something that everybody did. They drank, we drank, and we would steal beers from their ice chest. As time progressed, we moved from Hobbs to this little podunk town. It was even more podunk than Hobbs, if you can imagine that, named Jal, New Mexico. Jal, of all places. Not jail, Jal. And so we moved down there, and it had five bars. And when we moved down there, I was in ballet, and I was in all these dancing things, and I stopped dancing and I gained weight. And my mother liked to tell me about how fat I was on a daily basis. So she would tell me that I needed to lose weight. And so it was about that time that I found an older boyfriend because I was in high school, and I found methamphetamine. Now, methamphetamine and my body did not agree. I mean, I took it for a short period of time and I lost the weight. But at 15, when your mom walks into your closet and says, here's a purse and there's syringes in there, use syringes, and says, do you need help? Yes, I need help. But at the time I was like, nope, I'm good. You know, I'm finished with that one. And she never pursued it. So
she couldn't use syringes in a purse in your closet.
Yes.
And that was the end of the conversation.
Yes, that was the end of the conversation. There's a little more to the family dynamic. My family of origin was really, really horrible in the sense that we had this Leave It to Beaver like outward appearance. I mean, my dad made $120,000 a year. You know, he was in the oil field. And my mom was a stay-at-home kind of gal, but we had molestation. I was molested by not one but two granddads from the time I was 3 until I was 16. Later in life, I found that my mom was raped by one of the granddads, and so she hated him. But I couldn't understand why she put me in harm's way. And we, even later in life, it was only like 3 years ago that we began the conversation about this healing of why did you do this to me? And she didn't have any answers at all. Yeah.
Have you found other women in your journey in prison and here
with a similar kind of story of molestation or sexual trauma.
Absolutely. I think sexual trauma is one of the leading causes of a woman, A, not liking herself, and B, seeking substance abuse, because we're looking for relief from not only our inner self, we're looking for relief from the trauma that we're carrying. And as a provider now, I have a bachelor's degree in social work. As a person who understands trauma even better, I just wanted it to stop. I didn't want people to know. I had a lot of guilt and shame. I thought it was my fault. And when I asked my uncle, why do you think my granddad did this to me? He said, because you were a pretty little girl. So it threw the blame on me, right? I told my granddad, one of my granddads, I said, if you ever touch my little sister, I'll kill you. And I meant it, you know? So the abuse kind of stopped with me. I told on my granddad, and my grandmother stayed with him, and nobody championed me. And I couldn't understand that. I thought, you know, what the hell? You know, I'm a young girl and nobody's helping me, right? Nobody was helping me.
How do you think this kind of propelled you into substance abuse and later in and out of prison?
I think that for me, the substance abuse came because it says in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I teach from that, and it says, you know, people like the effect that drugs and alcohol produce. That's why we use them. So I liked the effect that it produced, but it also gave me an escape from the reality of A, what was going on in my life, and B, what was going on in my head. I think that for me, I didn't want to look back. I didn't want to look at and feel less than. I didn't want to feel the powerlessness. I didn't want to feel the rejection or the abandonment because nobody was helping me. And so that precipitated me going in and being promiscuous, okay? Because I was so good at, it's called disassociation. I was so good at leaving my body that I could leave my body at any given time. I'm a recovering prostitute as well. I made a whole lot of money because I was able to disassociate. So prostitution is a part of my story as well. I looked for love. And then I looked for relief from the pain. And the relief from the pain had a price. And it was jumping on this carousel where you would sleep with a man for money. And then you would get the drugs. And then you would go. And it would be this vicious cycle of staying in there. I come from, as you know, what I said, a very good and well-off family. But I ended up homeless on the streets in many towns.
Are you comfortable talking about the things that you were in prison for?
Sure. Back and forth? I got raped, and there was many times in my addiction when I was out there on the streets, many times that I'd gotten raped. And so I'm learning to walk through those right now. So I'd gotten raped, and I got a prescription of, I think it was Xanax, and I altered the prescription, increasing the dispensed amount from 60 pills to 160 pills. I did it because I like drugs.
You altered the prescription,
yes,
so you could get more.
Okay. Yes, and so they only gave me the 60 pills. The prescriptions, and all prescriptions, all legal documents are written in black. I marked on it in blue. Yeah, okay. I'm not a smart criminal. Any of the crimes that I committed were committed on me. Like, I wrote checks to myself on my ex-boyfriend's account. That's smart. Well, you don't have to look far to see who did that. But I was such a good liar that when I went to prison, it was for an evaluation right off the bat. And so I went down there for the evaluation, and I had them convinced that I didn't do it, that it was a fluke. I did it. And I couldn't learn to say I did it and take responsibility for the actions that I had. I couldn't. You know, I wanted those Xanax. And the intention that I had at the time, I'll tell you, was to commit suicide because I hated myself so much at that point. You know, but fortunately for me, God had a different plan.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and I'm talking with Kelly Allen about how Crossroads for Women and one of its residential programs, Maya's Place, helps women exiting incarceration return successfully to the community. She's a case manager at Maya's Place, but before that, she was incarcerated on and off for years, and she was a client. How did Maya's Place help you break that cycle in Crossroads?
Maya's Place saved my life. The very chair that you're sitting in, and I know the audience can't see it, that very chair right there, we call it the crying chair. That chair right there saved my life. I sat in that chair on numerous occasions and just poured out my story, poured out the grief and the pain and the anger and the hurt and the abandonment and the rejection. And I looked at it and somebody said, it's okay. Corey Lee was at the time a program director, and Tori Aragon, who's now another program director for the Pavilions, she was my case manager. And I would just come in there and I would just pour, and they would allow me to talk about it. They never said I was bad or that I was wrong. They believed my story and they championed that because they taught me to champion myself. They gave me my voice back.
Had you tried other programs to get clean or to stay out of prison, and why didn't they work?
Let me just tell you, I'm the queen of rehabs. I have been to 19 rehabs and or institutions. Everyone gave me a sense of purpose. Everyone gave me a sense of a little piece of who they were. But it didn't work until I was ready for it to work. And I think that Maya's was the last house on the block for me. I would go into other places and I would try to fix other people. Thus, that's why I'm a social worker today. But I've learned today that I have to fix myself. And so that's what I did. I learned to fix me. And Maya's gave me that. They showed me what tools to use to say no to drugs. They showed me what tools to use to make myself feel better and to make myself happy, to help other women trudge the road to happy destiny, if you will. So that's what I do today. They gave me purpose. They gave me my life back.
So you think it was a combination of, like, you were ready to make a change, but something about their program, you were able to get at those root issues.
I was. I think that I didn't sober up until I was 49, and I regret that daily. You know, I mean, there was a lot of time that I wasted, but I don't think experientially that if I had sobered up earlier, that I would have been given the gift of helping other women like myself. Every experience that I had was something that someone that I'm meeting now or that I will meet in the future is going to need. So I have the gift of all of these experiences that I'm going to be able to say, I understand. I've been there. I was so mad at God for the longest time. Oh, I couldn't tell you how mad at God. Why me? Why me? And he kept saying, why not you? Why not you? And now I understand. Every piece of darkness gave me a piece of light. And that's why I'm here.
Why was it helpful for you to, when you came to Maya's Place, to have counselors like you who had gone this path, right? Who weren't just a social worker, they'd actually lived this.
I think that if I'd had somebody who was just book smart, we talk about it all the time here at Maya's Place. If you're just book smart, we don't want you. We want somebody who's walked a mile in our shoes. Let me just tell you, I worked for the district attorney. I've had good jobs. And they crucified me when I committed a crime. And I spent 10 years in prison, 10 years learning about myself, learning about the things that I didn't want to do. I tell you, Maya's Place and the people that sat right across from me said, I honor the place that you're in. They honored that. They helped me carry it. They didn't try to give me direction or, you know, they made suggestions. Hey, this is what worked for you. Us. Maybe it'll work for you. And I could sort through that. Even the counselors that I worked with, and I still see a counselor to this day. I still do everything that I teach these women to do. See a counselor. See a sponsor. Go to your psychiatrist if you need to. Go to church if that's what soothes your soul, whatever it takes. What I teach is what I still do today. So it works.
What made it stick at Maya's Place and then at Crossroads?
Okay, one of the biggest problems that we have as women in early recovery is we're lonesome. We're lonesome. We're depressed. We don't know where our next fix is going to come from, whether it's going to come from a man or a poem or whatever. And usually we get into relationships. So we send our girls, just like they sent me out, into the world to make meetings. And we go to this place called Endorphin Power Company. Now, Endorphin Power Company is a great place for meetings, but it's also the place where you meet the man. And that's what gets us tripped up. So we talk about relationships. We talk about what to do, what not to do. We talked about what works for us. They taught me how to live. They taught me about the four agreements. Agreements I can live by. Simple stuff like let your word have integrity. You know, always do your best. Don't make assumptions. And don't take things personally. Just things like that. They took us places out in public. We didn't have to pay a dime of rent. We got to work on ourselves. And there's 8 levels that we worked on. Freshman level, you kind of sit your hot behind here and you learn, hey, this is what I need to do. This is how I need to act. This is where I'm going to go. We work with a vocational coordinator. They help us with our resume, get geared up for our job interviews. So it builds on each other. That's why it works, because when you get to the point where you can go out and work, you're ready, because they've done mock interviews with you. They've gotten you dress clothes so you don't look like a hot mess. They really, really work with you to guide you into the next phase of development and finally into transition from here.
Do you have thoughts about things policy-wise or structural-wise that should change?
In the prison system, I think that there's, as a person who spent a very long time incarcerated, I think that there's a number of things that could change in there. The amount of time that you spend in there just being told to structurally when to get up, when to go to bed, when to brush your teeth, whatever you're going to do. These are the classes that they offer. Give the women something that they can really do while they're in there. Give them that, give them schooling. There's not enough GED in there. They need that so that they can get out and not be left in that loop again and go back to the same old thing that they came from. What they're not doing is they're not giving women the things that they need to make it out there. Maybe you don't know how to have a parent and teacher conference. Maybe you've never balanced a checkbook. Maybe you've never had to pay rent. Maybe you've never had to ask for anything. There's so many women. I can tell you, Megan, women come here and they don't even know how to set up their own appointments. I'm having to do that for them, or to teach them to do that so that in the future they can do that themselves. There's got to be some schooling, some better amenities for these women, or they're just going to keep doing what they're doing.
So does Maya's Place and then Crossroads give those life skills, the soft skills in addition?
Absolutely, we do. I teach reintegration, and I teach it's a healing journey. Sometimes we call it trauma from your mama. But it's a lot of fun, and these are really the hardest classes in my perception, and the girls will tell you the same thing, that they work on. Our classes are, we're looking at where the trauma came from, how to heal that trauma. People come in here and we don't just start using drugs and alcohol. There's some core pathology in there that we need to address. You know, why did you start using drugs and alcohol? And so we start looking at that. Mine was the abuse, being abused as a child, having an emotionally unavailable mom. You know, several different things set me on my journey. The course was laid out, the same thing. So we start looking at that. People cry up there. It's very confidential in my classes because you're going to talk about the heavy stuff. Now, these are conversations that should be happening with their counselor. Not sure that they are. So we do work on it in here. We paint in there. We draw in there. We write poetry in there. We talk about the wounds that are in there, or the wounds that began our journey. The other one, reintegration, talks about how we can have a decent relationship. What to do when you're bored. What to do when you're lonely. Where to go when you need whatever. You know, referrals. We teach sponsorship. Get a sponsor. We don't want you out there and you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs, idle time. And it says this, idle hands are the devil's workshop. It's the damn truth. It is the truth. If you've got too much time on your hands, chances are you're going to go back to the way you were. So we teach them how to live in these. There's life skills classes. Catherine Dowling, she's our vocational coordinator. She teaches these women so many valuable skills about how to go into the workforce and really remain there. I know that when I came into the workforce, when I was at Maya's Place, I was so beholding. You know, thank you so much for this job that I allowed a lot of things to happen, you know, that shouldn't have happened. Like, people would dog me. I had one supervisor that dogged me all the time, you know. But I needed the job and I was going to show him. So there's so many classes that these girls are getting that are really bringing their awareness of who they are up, as well as their self-esteem. Yeah.
That was Kelly Allen, a former client of Maya's Place and Crossroads for Women, who is now a case manager for the organization. You can hear all these interviews and read more about this issue, including the collection of stories I created for the Solutions Journalism Network at KUNM.org.